Okay, T, so there's people on 16 and pregnant that give up their baby for adoption and then go back when they're ready. I'm just saying, we can do this together. We can have a kid and be parents from afar. If we were white people, maybe, but we're Black. So let's get real.
It's the TMI Project Story Hour, a series of true stories created in our writing workshops by everyday unsung heroes. They all divulge the too much information parts we usually keep to ourselves for personal liberation, human connection, and freedom, both for themselves and those who listen. Before we get started, we just want to let you know that as the TMI implies, some content might be too much information for some listeners. And remember, your support keeps our content free and accessible to everyone who wants to listen. So if you like what you hear and you're able to chip in at tmiproject.org, thank you. Either way, we are glad you're listening. I'm Eva Tenuto, and I'll be your host for today's episode. Is that a secret you're keeping? Today, we're celebrating Tahira.
What's up, everybody? It's me, Tahira Savannah.
Tahira is from Brooklyn. She's an artivist, a writer, a dreamer, and a self-proclaimed outspoken weirdo. And lucky for us, she's been an active participant in Stories for Choice since 2022. Using her story in an effort to turn the tide and address one of the most critical issues at this moment in history, reproductive justice.
I was a part of the January 2022 cohort 6 months before they actually removed the protections of Roe versus Wade. I told my story in essence, not really believing that we'd be here.
Since Roe was overturned, Stories for Choice took on a new meaning. This year, TMI Project has been more dedicated than ever, and Tahira has joined us on more than one occasion. We collaborated with an educational training organization to use the power of true storytelling to train tens of thousands of healthcare professionals nationwide. Tahira and nine other storytellers were generous enough to share deeply personal stories about injustices they faced while accessing or trying to access care, to be used in lieu of case studies, to educate providers, all in an effort to improve the quality of care for others. Most recently, Tahira joined TMI Project on a trip to Wisconsin to present at Planned Parenthood's All Staff Day.
And we made it. Planned Parenthood, Wisconsin. We're here for their All Staff Day. We're speaking. We're running a writing workshop. I'm so excited.
Breaking news on the battle over abortion rights.
A Dane County judge will let a legal challenge continue against Wisconsin's 1849 law banning abortion.
A Dane County judge explained in a ruling that Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban applies when someone kills or injures a fetus, but it does not apply to a consensual abortion, meaning this case will continue.
Wisconsin is one of the many states that had to stop offering abortion services when Roe v. Wade was overturned. They made this decision based on the 1849 Assembly Bill 116. As the title implies, it's a bill that was created 174 years ago, and it does not mention abortion at all. It's about feticide, basically when someone violently abuses a pregnant person and their injuries cause them to lose the pregnancy. It has nothing to do with accessing consensual health care.
We're here to support their staff, let them know that the work that they're doing is very important, and we appreciate everybody showing up today. I got all dressed up.
Because of the tireless efforts of Planned Parenthood workers, Wisconsin is also one of the only states that has been able to successfully reinstate abortion services.
Since the U.S. Supreme Court decision, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin has maintained there were two paths that would allow PPWI to resume providing abortion services. A legislative path and a legal path.
That's Tanya Atkinson, CEO of Planned Parenthood Wisconsin.
A ruling by the Dane County Circuit Court in July made it clear that the 1849 law is not enforceable for voluntary abortions. This Monday, September 18th, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin will resume abortion care at our Water Street Health Center in Milwaukee.
We arrived at their all-staff day 3 weeks after this victory. The feeling in the room was palpable. The elation and pride of a monumental, history-making win. The rage still bubbling over for having to fight it at all. The exhaustion from tireless work to make it all happen and knowing there is still so much more that needs to be done. And the love for each other for having gone through it together. It was all there. It became so clear that we were, of course, there to offer programming, but we were really there to honor them, to support them, to help revitalize them so they could keep going. I loved witnessing Tahira's honesty, strength, vulnerability, and courage open up everyone in that room. Through sharing her story, she sparked a truth-telling contagion. And in sharing their own stories, the employees from Planned Parenthoods across the state of Wisconsin were able to release a little of what they were holding to. They cried and laughed and hugged and left feeling a little lighter and ready to carry on. The experience affirmed for me how important it is for all of us to support those on the front lines of change. While you may not be able to hop on a plane to Wisconsin and tell your story, you can still join us by supporting our work. This month, we're making a concerted effort to raise money for Stories for Choice so that in 2024, we can continue to educate healthcare providers and offer supportive programming to those doing the heavy lifting. You can join us by giving the gift of a story today at tmiproject.org/support. Now here's Tahira. This performance was held on Zoom for educators and healthcare providers nationwide.
Carl and I hooked up in high school. First, he was a rebound, but after a year, I tried to see our relationship as something more real. Now that I'm in college, it's more than a teen relationship, but less than an adult one. But he does keep me focused and on track. Even though he dropped out, he refuses to let me consider it. When I tell him that I'm pregnant, he is so supportive and literally like the best version of himself. I joke that if MTV ever does a college version of 16 and Pregnant, we could be the next stars. But I also say, we're 20 years old. Like, we are not parents. I can't afford tuition on my own and you live with your mom. We can't do this to an innocent. Reluctantly, he agrees. Until recently, I had gone to the same gynecologist as my mother and my aunt. But it always felt like they were in my business, like my sexual business. So now I have to find a new doctor for this abortion. I go and sit on the steps of the library, something I never do. This group of girls, blonde-haired, wearing Victoria's Secret's lounge pants, matching Ugg boots, shuffle past me on the steps. I don't make eye contact because I'm crying at this point. They don't see me either. White people rarely do. As I sit on the steps, a story my grandmother told me comes to mind. She left her three youngest kids in Trinidad and Tobago and came to New York City around the late 1960s. The first job she got was a nanny to a middle-class white couple in New Jersey. She loves the memory. She tells it in a happy tone because she was able to be a provider, though not present in her kids' life. The children who she was taking care of happened to be 2, 4, and 6 years old. The same ages of my then mother, my uncle, and my aunt. I get up, thinking I am the representative of survival. God did not bring me all the way here to get weak now. This is the mindset I need to start researching abortion services. The tears dry before I get to my dorm room. I call a healthcare clinic and schedule an abortion for April 20th. 2 days before the procedure, Carl comes up to the school and I find him standing in front of my classroom. I'm annoyed. Why didn't you tell me you were coming? Why are you here? I want to keep the baby, he says. Carl, are you throwing up in class? No, because you don't even go to school. What are you going to teach this baby? I'm a bitch about it. But I'm hormonal, and I'm the only one in this conversation who is pregnant. Okay, T, so there's people on 16 and pregnant that give up their baby for adoption and then go back when they're ready. I'm just saying, we can do this together. We can have a kid and be parents from afar. If we were white people, maybe, but we're Black. So let's get real. The day of the procedure arrives, I'm ushered through a series of exam rooms. In the first room, I'm giving a sonogram from an upbeat technician. "Come closer so you can hear," she says. Reluctantly, I lean in, and there it is, muffled, underwater. Baboom, baboom, baboom. For a minute, I'm intrigued. This little fucker got a heartbeat at like 5 weeks? That's kinda cool. But I come to my senses. Black college student flunks out of an all-white university. Is that gonna be your headline? No. There's no fucking way. Okay, can I leave now? I feel horrible. Like I'm literally taking a living soul from the planet. I'm pro-choice. Getting this abortion is my choice. But it's a choice that's infected by the reality of white supremacy. If I was white, this would be a different kind of choice. They call my name. Miss Cordner! The last room is the one where you have to remove all of your clothing and put on a gown. The nurse has reddish hair and a French manicure. She smiles at me and she puts on her surgical mask and gloves. "Can I keep my socks?" I ask. "No, when you're going under anesthesia, you're required to be fully nude." I roll my eyes. It's freaking socks. I just wanted to feel in control. A white male doctor comes in and the energy shifts. It wasn't my energy that shifted. It was the other people in the room. It's like being a student. The bell rings, the teacher looks up, and now you're scared to make eye contact with the friends you were just gabbing to. Now there's a seriousness to the air. Black women, by a matter of generational trauma, will be wary of a white man in charge of their naked body. My life and my uterus is now in this man's hands. I make sure to look him in the eyes. He introduces himself. Dr. Something. "I'll be doing your DNA to terminate the fetus. Can you confirm that you want this procedure?" I'm furious. Why are they treating women like this? How many times do you need to listen to the heartbeat and verbally agree? But I smile and say to the doctor, "I don't want any kids. I made a mistake." Dr. Something tells me to hoist myself onto the table. One leg here and the other there. "Okay, Miss Cordner, the anesthesia is going into your IV. You're going to take a little sleep in. One, two." When I open my eyes again, a black nurse with soft hands is holding my wrist to check my pulse. I'm tired and groggy. Her hand was a proverbial sigh of relief. I made it back. And now I'm in the hands of someone who looks like me. It felt like family for a split second. Her voice and touch was familiar to me. I felt taller. I felt physically stronger. I had survived the hardest part. Thank God for that white doctor studying for what? Decades. Just to be of service to women in my predicament. I wanted to go back to him and to say thanks. The post-op experience gave me a freedom. A freedom I don't think a lot of women get to experience. When you trust in others, regardless of their race, you learn to trust more in yourself. Getting an abortion marked a turning point in my life from child to adult. I had to grow up faster than I ever wanted. I made a decision to do something difficult, but necessary. Even though it was intimidating and scary, I researched, advocated, and followed through with it all on my own. Not all women are able to do this or tell their abortion story, but I choose to. Through my story, I find freedom and strength.
Thank you, Tahira, for sharing your story with our listeners today and for your passionate dedication to Stories for Choice. And of course, I'm really glad that you get something out of it too.
The fulfilling aspect personally for writing your own story was the first time I wrote a story and performed it, is that it gives me power. Too many times we don't tell the too much information part of our story, and it's really where the story needs to be.
Again, if you'd like to support Stories for Choice and dedicated storytellers like Tahira to continue to speak truth to power, give them the gift of a story with a donation today at tmiproject.org/support. Either way, thank you so much for joining us. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. TMI Project is available to offer true storytelling workshops and performances for your school or workplace. To learn more or to support our work, you can find details about it all at tmiproject.org. This episode of the TMI Project Story Hour was produced in partnership with Radio Kingston. It was written, edited, and produced by me, Eva Tenuto, Blake File, and Rain Grayson. Our theme song is Secrets by Edison Woods. I'm Eva Tenuto, TMI Project's Executive Director. Our Operations and Programs Manager is Blake File. Our Marketing and Digital Coordinator is Laura Marie Ruoco. Our Administrative Assistant is Riley Gibbons. Our Graphic Designer and Webmaster is Lauren Gill. Our Workshop Leaders are Perla Iora, Haley Downs, Rain Grayson, Ray Lipkin, Dara Lori, Micah, Julie Novak, Blake File, and me, Eva Tenuto. New episodes of the TMI Project Story Hour come out every Wednesday. To learn more and to find a special writing prompt so you can start telling your story, visit tmiproject.org/podcast.